Much for the invitation. So it is such a nice place, and this is my first time talking in such an open area. Indeed, it looks like it's a tea room, so very nice. And my topic is equivariant SYZ. So let me start with reviewing what is SYZ, what is the original proposal. So they propose that mirror symmetry is T duality. So what is mean by that? I guess you are very familiar with that. So the story starts from Kontsevich homological mirror symmetry conjecture that he said that Korean sheaves on a space is mirror to the Foucault category of the mirror space, right? And then so if this is true, so assuming this, so in particular, you consider a skyscraper sheaf over a point in the space M check. And then, well, then it would be mirrored to a certain object in the Foucault category, which is Lagrangian submanifold. So Lagrangian brain inside the mirror, M. By the way, my convention is a little bit different because usually I work with Foucault category, so I put the check in different way. But yeah, it doesn't matter. And then the skyscraper sheaf move in the n-dimensional manifold, so it has n-dimensional deformation space, right? The point moves. And so you expect that, well, then the Lagrangian also has n-dimensional deformation, and the deformation is given by the first cohomology, so h1 should be n. And now you think further, so you consider endomorphism of the skyscraper sheaf as an object in the derived category, then it should be like a torus. So the X group is a wedge of Cn, so it's like a torus. So you expect that the Lagrangian should be like a torus, at least cohomologically. All right, now you think further. So you move OP, in the whole space. So it just move around. So the Lagrangian should also cover the whole space. So the Lagrangian move around in the space. So it should form a leaf of a foliation. Or in best case, it should be fibers of Lagrangian fibration. So that's how SYZ obtain Lagrangian vibration in this thought experiment. And then now, well, the first thing to notice is, of course, it doesn't match because, well, on the complex side, it is wedge of Cn. On the Lagrangian side, it is just wedge of Rn, right, if you consider the cohomology. So you have to complexify. So to complexify, you consider flat U1 connections, and that form a dual torus. So now you fix the Lagrangian, and you move the flat connection, right? You fix a Lagrangian and you move the flat connection. That form a dual torus. So that gives a set of points inside M check, right? Because Lagrangian brain should be mirrored to points in the mirror. So it gives a dual torus in M check. And then now you move around L also, then you also expect M check has a dual torus vibration. So this is a very bold thought experiment based on homological mirror symmetry conjecture. And it's surprising that it gives a very big guiding principle, and it works very well in many cases. So indeed, they consider further. So for them, maybe I should hear. So for them, so they consider special Lagrangians because special Lagrangians are canonical representatives. They minimize the volume of the Lagrangian. But for us, we consider homological, and also we consider mirror construction. So special is not that important in my talk. So. All right. Okay. So as I have said, it give a big guiding principle. On the other hand, to really carry it out, so you still have to consider precise quantum corrections. So first of all, you notice that indeed, well, endomorphism of the Lagrangian brain is not just given by cohomology. So indeed, it is given by flow cohomology. All right. So flow cohomology is defined using counting of holomorphic disks. So you need these as quantum correction. And in particular, indeed, L doesn't have to be a torus, right? So indeed, L could even be singular. And for singular Lagrangian, it could still may have the flow cohomology to be cohomology of a torus, right? So then you can allow singular fiber to talk about flow cohomology. So the Lagrangian vibration could have singular fibers, first of all. And then, as I have said, so the flow cohomology is defined by counting holomorphic disks. So roughly speaking, you consider k input chains, and you consider the set of all holomorphic disks that pass through these k input chains. And now you consider the evaluation image of this set of holomorphic disks. So you evaluate at the output point, and that gives a chain inside the Lagrangian. So that defines an operation, so-called MK operation, and defines an A-infinity algebra indeed. Of course, to really carry it out, it is very complicated. And well, Foucault, O, Ota, and Ono used Kuranishi structure to realize this A-infinity structure. And then, well, if you think further, so you need to count disks. And indeed, well, in general, L could even be obstructed, meaning that floor cohomology may not be well defined. So to make floor cohomology defined, indeed, you need the obstruction term M0 to vanish. So in general, it may not vanish. So M0 just means you count holomorphic disks without any input mark point. So without any input, so it is a chain inside L. Well, it is a chain, so you write it as linear combination of the fundamental class and other chains. You want that, well, at least the other chains vanish so that you can have floor cohomology well defined. And such condition is called weakly unobstructed. So indeed, what you want is you consider the set of all deformations of L such that all these term HY should vanish. You don't need W to vanish, because even W non-vanishing, it can still be defined. The floor cohomology can still be defined. You just need HY to be zero. So you want HY to be zero. And then W becomes a function defined on this modularized space of Lagrangians with the obstruction term to be zero. So you get a Landau-Ginzburg model. So this is how you make mirror out of a Lagrangian ring, at least local mirror. And so this was carried out by Foucault, O, Ota, and Ono for the toric manifold case. And then it was my joint work with Cho and Hong carrying this out for P1ABC, so orbifold P1, using indeed not smooth Lagrangian, but a Seidel Lagrangian. So a immersed Lagrangian constructed by Seidel. So as I have said, L doesn't have to be torus, indeed, right? Okay, is there any question? Good. And then now, if you arrive at a Landau-Ginzburg model, so indeed, what you should consider as object should be matrix factorization. So in the derived category, you should consider matrix factorization instead of skyscraper sheaf over a point. So in particular, well, before we carried out the reasoning for SYZ using skyscraper sheaf of a point, and we conclude that it should be a torus. But now, because now it's even more general, so you just use Kozu-type matrix factorization. So indeed, well, it doesn't have to be torus even. So you can make use of even more general Lagrangian. So that generalized the SYZ program a lot indeed. All right, so indeed. But and then, well, there's another problem that, well, the may not have solution, right? So HY equals to zero. So this is a bunch of equations. There may not be any solution. So in general, you need to enlarge the space of solutions so that you can solve the equation. And so you allow non-commutativity of the variable. So here, HY depends on the deformation variable, and you just allow them to be non-commutative. You consider free algebra generated by those variables, and then you just regard these as formal relations on those variables, right? So in making use of non-commutative space, then you can construct more examples of generalized SYZ mirror. And then, so for instance, in this way, you can obtain non-commutative resolution of conifold as mirror to the deformed conifold, for instance. All right, so this is also a joint work with Cho and Hong. And then, And then also another complicated thing is that, well, floor cohomology is defined over Novikov field. So in general, it is not over complex numbers. So indeed, before I cheat a little bit, it is defined over Novikov field to make sense of this, especially in the non-exact case. So when it is exact, it is still over C. But if it is non-exact, when it involves really some holomorphic disks bounded by Lagrangian, then you need to make use of Novikov field, which is just power series in T, where the coefficients are real numbers instead of integers, right? And then X-check, the mirror constructed in this way would be defined over the Novikov ring. All right, so this is quantum corrections. So it is a bit abstract, so let's review. Yes.
M-check or X-check?
M-check, yes, sometimes I... The first time I prepare this slide, I use x, and then gradually I find that I also use x for the variable, so I use m, and then I forgot to change this. But yeah, x check means m check. All right, so let's review the Torre-Calabi-Yau case to make it more concrete. All right, so Torre-Calabi-Yau manifold, well, it is toric, so it has a moment polytope like this. So this is the example of KP2. All right, so, well, they are important because they are local building blocks of compact Calabi-Yau. So indeed, it is current program of Wafer. He wants to make use of these local building blocks to compute, well, Gromov-Witten invariants for compact Calabi-Yau. So you can think of compact Calabi-Yau as kind of a web of these local building blocks. All right, and then, well, as I have said, this provides an example, KP2. And then, well, it is Calabi-Yau because it has a global holomorphic volume form. And then in local toric coordinate, it is just written in a very simple way. And then you can also write it in this way. So you have a global well-defined holomorphic function, nu, and we will make use of this. So to carry out SYZ, you need a Lagrangian torus vibration. So in this case, how to do it is you make use of the Tn minus 1 action. Of course, you have Tn action on M, but let's just use of Tn minus 1 to preserve this volume form. All right, so you use Tn minus 1 reduction. And then, well, after the reduction, you get a plane, right? Because it is n-dimensional. After reduced by n minus 1 dimensional, you get a plane. You get a plane. And then, so curves in the plane would give Lagrangian, right? You just pull back curves in the, plane is Lagrangian, first of all, right? It's one-dimensional object. And then you just consider the pre-image, then it gives Lagrangian in the total space. And to get Lagrangian vibration, what you do is you take concentric circles, and you consider a pre-image. And you notice that some of, well, most circles are good, so they just correspond to torus, but some of the circles are bad when it passes through the origin of the plane, of the complex plane. Then also, the symplectic reduction, you have to fix a point to talk about, well, you have to fix a level to talk about symplectic reduction. Let's say you fix the level here. So this skeleton, one-dimensional skeleton, is just obtained from projecting the one-dimensional skeleton of the toric moment map image to the plane, right? So let's say you take a point in the codimension, well, in the codimension 2 singularity. So you take a point here on the edge. And so you take the level here. And then you also take a circle passing through the origin. Then you encounter a singular Lagrangian. So pre-image of every point, most of the point is just T2. But when it goes to this point, the origin, then the torus shrink to a circle. So you get a singular Lagrangian. And in this case, indeed, it is immersed, all right? OK, and another thing is, indeed, well, these concentric circles are very good, except at the, well, at the origin of the concentric circles, right? Then you encounter degenerate circles, right? So you take away this. So it is an anti-canonical divisor. So nu equals to, well, indeed, well, if you call this origin, it should be called nu equals to 1. So but it depends on how you call them. Maybe, yeah, take away nu equals to 1, let's say. OK. So this is Lagrangian torus vibration. We will work with this to do SYZ. Another important type of brain is called a Eigenergic Wafer brain. So it corresponds to ray in this complex plane. It is just the same complex plane, same symplectic reduction, but instead of circle, you take a ray. Then the topology is R2 cross S1. So same, the T2 degenerate to circle. So it gives you R2 cross S1. Yeah. Any question? Right. Now let's consider how we do the SYZ. So indeed, it was a work date back to 7 years ago. Well, 7 or 8 indeed. And then so we carry out the SYZ construction and show that well, they grew up into a nice mirror, which is a conic vibration. So it is UV equals to some equation. So UV is in C2 and Z is in C star, the torus. All right. So here, there are some Kähler parameters, and there are also some Z variables which are parametrizing the flat connections. But anyway, so it is a conic vibration. Okay. And also, it involves some series, 1 plus delta. 1 plus delta are generating functions of stable disks bounded by toric fibers. Okay, so it involves something like this. I will talk about these stable disks again in the next page. All And then, for instance, for KB2, well, this is just a very simple equation. So UV equals to some constant, depending on Q, plus, well, this is like the mirror for P2, right? So this is the mirror for KB2. All right? So, yes.
In these series, do they encode the mirror map?
Yes, exactly. This is the next point. So this series indeed is the inverse mirror map. We prove that in the later work. So how we prove that is that we compactify. That's shown in the next page. But, right. By proving this, then we show that it is agree with a physics result of Horry-Iqbal-Wafa via the mirror map. So this is the inverse one. Indeed. Right. So the inverse mirror map is counting of holomorphic disks. And then, well, in the reverse, in another direction, right? So you take a conic vibration. Indeed, they regard it as a blow-up of hypersurface in toric. So you take such expression and construct Lagrangian vibration on here and do it in the reverse way. So construct toric labial as mirror of this. So this is work of Abu Zaid, Aru, Katsakov. So they prove that SYZ mirror of this conic vibration is the toric labial. Well, in the reverse way, indeed, you don't need this power series because this is A-side information. Now you take M check as A-side, then you don't need this indeed. Yeah, in our direction, we need this counting invariance. All right, so what are the delta? Well, recall that for KP2, it is of this form. So 1 minus 2 KO and so on. So these are counting of holomorphic disks, in these stable disks bounded by toric fiber. So this T3 is a toric fiber of the toric labial. And then, well, you have some basic disks bounded by this toric fiber. But the more complicated series is not just coming from the basic disk. It comes from the sphere bubbling phenomenon. So indeed, you can attach spheres inside the P2 to these holomorphic disks, and then this form stable disk, and which is obstructed. So the Mohr space becomes obstructed, and it is hard to compute directly. So how we compute these invariants is that we compactify this, first of all, compactify the whole space by adding a ceiling to this toric diagram. And then you also, in that compactified space, you compactify this disk to a sphere. And then we prove that, well, counting of stable disks like this is the same as counting the rational curves inside the new space. And then counting of rational curves, well, you already know how to do it by localization and so on. So there are indeed concrete formulas for those counting. So I function and J function and so on. And then we can compute these disks through that systematically and show that it equals to the inverse mirror map. All right, another important ingredient besides the disk counting is that it has wall crossing phenomenon. So this was discovered by Aru in 07, maybe earlier. And then so he said that generating functions of disks undergo wall crossing. So he showed it explicitly in the case of C2 and P2 and so on. So it has wall crossing phenomenon. So the thing is that in our picture, right, so we draw concentric circles on the plane, on the reduced space. So the thing is that, well, you have two types of circle. One is Chekhov, which does not wind about this singularity. And another type of torus is given by this bigger circle, Clifford, which wind about this singularity. And they behave very differently in terms of counting disk. So there are two types. So for Chekhov torus, indeed, by maximal principle, it only bound one disk, so which is this one, right? But for Clifford, it turns out that it is just the same as toric fiber. So for Clifford, you can just move it and then move to be a circle centered at the singularity. Then this becomes a toric fiber, right? For toric fiber, you already know how many disks it counts. So as we have talked about, the disk counting for toric fiber. So it has the same disk counting as toric fiber. So it has more, right? So the Clifford torus bound more holomorphic disks or stable disks than the Chekhov torus. And the reason is exactly because when you go across this point, over this point, there are mass of zero holomorphic disks coming from the one-dimensional skeleton. And then it interacts with these mass of zero disks to form more disks bounded by the Clifford torus, all right? And then, so the two tori, two kinds of torus, bound different disks. And so you have to match these two generating functions. To match them, then you glue the, well, this is dual torus right? So this is just dual torus parameterizing the flat U1 connection. So for Clifford torus, you consider flat connections, then you have one torus. And for Chekhanov torus, you also consider flat U1 connection, then you get another dual torus, right? I just complexify the torus to be C star. Okay. So to match the generating function, you have to glue correctly accordingly. So you just declare that the gluing is like this to match the generating function, and then you produce the mirror in this way. All right, so this is the mirror formula, UV equals to this guy, right? Okay, yeah, any question? So this is our old story of constructing a mirror toric labial manifold. Now I'm talking about a recent update. So let's go to a recent update. So the previous construction, so matching the generating functions of holomorphic disks is a little bit ad hoc. Well, we just declare the gluing function to be like that so that it matches the generating functions. So more systematically, so rather than just the generating function of disks, you should consider the flow cohomology, the whole flow cohomology instead, right? So holomorphic disk is, well, the generating function is just M0 term. So instead of just M0, you should consider M0, M1, M2. So you should consider the whole flow cohomology. Well, the flow cohomology in this case is essentially T star, if you ignore the weakly unobstructed term. So it is just T star. And then as we move L around, then this flow cohomology also moves, also varies. So that's a so-called family flow theory nowadays. So it was first of all proposed by Fukaya and then worked out more by Tu. And then nowadays it is, extensively worked out by Abusai. Okay. Well, our method is a little bit different, although it's the same philosophy. So instead of talking about the variation of flow cohomology, what we consider is more concrete isomorphism between the objects. So we use pseudo-isomorphism to capture the variation. All right. So recall that we have concentric circles, right? So these two are concentric circles. So what we do is we deform, let's say, the smaller circle a little bit to intersect with L2, so to make appropriate intersection. Otherwise, it cannot be isomorphic, right? Isomorphic. So floor morphism is given by Lagrangian intersection. All right. You have to make them intersect so that you have some floor cochain at least, right? To talk about the isomorphism.
So they're not Hamiltonian isotopic. So
right. So right now I just deform a little bit to talk about the mirror functor. Indeed, I deform a lot. So it's not Hamiltonian. Yeah, in the end. But yeah, to talk about to capture this variation, you don't even need to deform a lot. So you can use Hamiltonian to capture the variation. Indeed, although to talk about convergence, you have to deform a lot. Indeed, later on I will deform a lot, and that's not Hamiltonian. Right, you're right. All right, so what is isomorphism? Well, it is very simple in categorical sense. So you have a Fukaya category, so you have two objects in the category, L1, L2. And then the morphism is given by the flow cohomology. But now we talk about chain level, so alpha is a flow chain from L1 to L2, so just intersection. Beta is another intersection. So they form an isomorphism if, well, first of all, they have to be cycle. So D of alpha has to be 0, D of beta has to be 0. And then you also need that alpha beta composed to be identity, right? So this is what we mean by isomorphism in the floor sense. All right, to get the wall crossing formula or the gluing formula, what you do is you solve this system of equations to get the formula, right? So we consider deformation of L1, consider deformation of L2. So we relate the deformation of L1 and L2 by requiring that they have to satisfy this bunch of equations to make alpha and beta to be isomorphism, right? Okay, so, and indeed it gives more. So as I have said, it just does not just give the mirror equation. So it gives the mirror functor indeed. So of course, to talk about mirror functor, then you need more. You need more convergence. And then in that case, we really deform L1 to big. So not using Hamiltonian, we really move L1, slide it so that this area, this small area looking, is the same as this area. So we deform it a lot so that this area is the same as this area to get the mirror functor. To get the mirror equation, you don't need that. But to get the mirror functor, because you need convergence with other Lagrangians, then you need that. Okay, And then indeed in this case, so in the exact and monotone setting, so Seidel and Pascalov-Tonkhanov solve this equation, M1 alpha equals to zero. So they require that the floor cohomology is non-trivial. So to have non-trivial floor cohomology, they want alpha to be a cycle. So solving this equation will give this grouing formula in the, well, in the exact setting. Well, of course, for toric labial, you have more terms, but it's the same philosophy, except that it is no longer exact or monotone. So you have to use Kronisch structure. All right, so this is very nice. So it glues the Chekhanov torus and the Clifford torus and give this mirror gluing equation. All right, relation between the deformation space, the dual torus. But on the other hand, if you just glue the two torus still, indeed, U equals to V equals to zero is still missing. So here, in this formula, U, V are C star variable, all right, because they are dual torus. They are parametrizing flat connections, so they cannot be zero, right? So they do not cover this point, U equals to V equals to zero. So this is the mirror picture. So you glue this C star squared, you glue the other C star squared, right? And then, well, after gluing, so this cylinder is wholly glued to here, and then this part has no, does not coincide with this part. So after you glue, you get kind of a degenerate conic, except that you do not get the origin, right? U equals to V equals to zero. So in order to recover the origin, so what we do is that we glue in the immersed Lagrangian, all right? So recall that we do not just have smooth toroid, right? So we also have a circle passing through the singularity, and that corresponds to an immersed S2, right? Because a circle collapsed to a point. Well, in high dimension, of course, you just cross with some other torus vector that we don't really care, right? So you focus on this immersed S2, and then we prove that, well, first of all, so the immersed points give you two degree one deformations. So it's branch changing, right? So you change from the top branch to bottom branch and vice versa, so you get two generators. So essentially, you are thinking of a kind of formal smoothing of this immersed point a little bit, right? So there are two ways of smoothing. So one is U, one is V. So that's the two formal parameters, U and V. Indeed, I denote by U0 and V0. All right. And then, so we prove that it is unobstructed, first of all. So floor cohomology can be well defined. And then we show that, well, the gluing formula is exactly given by U0, V0 equals to 1 plus C. All right. So this is the gluing formula. And also U0 is U. So we count disk. We count this bounded by these three Lagrangians, all right? So recall that we glue by isomorphism. So we have isomorphism alpha 1, alpha 2, and alpha 3 between these three objects. And then the co-cycle condition will... So first of all, you already know the gluing formula between the Chekhanov and Clifford torus, Seidel and Tonkhanov, Pascalov Tonkhanov. And then you use the co-cycle condition to deduce this gluing formula between the immersed Lagrangian and the torus, all right? And then, as I have said, so, well, you have two kinds of torus. The torus will have flat connections, so that gives the dual torus. And you glue the deformation space of this immersed Lagrangian. So this is the deformation space. More rigorously speaking, we have to work with Novikov field to consider convergence issue and so on. And then, so you glue this deformation space, UV, essentially. Well, this is to ensure convergence variation. Yeah, you take away variation equals to zero, UV. So anyway, so you glue the deformation space, roughly speaking, it's C2 almost, right? You glue this deformation space of this immersed Lagrangian to the dual torus, all right? So C2 gives a, essentially, it is just C2 gives a partial compactification of the dual C star squared, right? C2 is a compactification of C star squared. So that's the idea, right? So you glue that, so you get a partial compactification. So this fills in the missing point, U equals to V equals to zero. And then there is another way by Rizal, Ekholm, and Tonkhanov. So they use Legendre topology to get this gluing formula. So essentially, they put this immersed point to infinity and then consider a Legendre there, corresponding Legendre there, and consider some algebra, right? Chekhanov Eliashberg algebra, and consider and obtain this this gluing formula in the exact and monotone setting. All right. Okay, and as an application, then well, our formula is rather convenient to get the disk potential, right? So in Grassmannian, you already know the disk potential for the toroid. And so you use this Gruen formula to obtain the disk potential for the inverse Lagrangian and also construct the SYZ mirror, complete SYZ mirror. And then this Gruen method also works for punctured Riemann surface. And well, you just fix a pair of pens decomposition. And so you have these sidereal Lagrangians. And then you use this gluing method to glue the deformation space of the sidereal Lagrangians to obtain the mirror. And because we also have the functor, so this gives a proof of the homological mirror symmetry. Yes.
So
the
solar ones, you have like cluster charts and stuff?
Yes. So, right, the C star square, right? So the torus chart are the cluster charts, right? And they obey this wall crossing formula, UV equals to 1 plus C. So it's kind of like partial commodification of the cluster variety. All right, so because we have an expert here, Ben, on hypertoric manifolds, so let's also explain a related story for hypertoric manifolds. So indeed, the construction is very similar. So you consider cotangent of P2 instead of KP2. So cotangent of P2 has extra structure. It is hyperkähler. And indeed, in general, you consider hyperkähler toric manifold. So it is hyperkähler quotient of Cn, C2n. So it is determined by this hyperplane arrangement. I won't be detailed on this. But anyway, it is similar to KP2, but it is hyperplane arrangement. So this triangle thing is like the P2. Right? And then, well, you take away certain anti-canonical divisor. Well, yeah. Well, anyway, to make sense of the counting. And then, so the SYZ mirror of this divisor complement is essentially this variety. So you obtain this by wall crossing again. But this is singular. And indeed, our gluing method give you a particular resolution of this singular variety. All right, the next page will show a picture. And then, well, to talk about SYZ again, you need Lagrangian vibration. So this time, we need to use the method of Abelzeit, Arrou, and Katsakov, because the reduction reduced space is higher dimensional now. So the torus reduction is CD instead of C1, right? So then this is high dimensional. It has a non-standard reduced symplectic form. We need to use Moser argument to compare with the standard symplectic form. And then, or if it is standard, then it's easy, right? You just have standard Lagrangian vibration given by norm squared. And so you just pull back. But well, if it is non-standard, you need to use Moser argument to pull back this Lagrangian vibration back to this non-trivial reduced space. And then you get Lagrangian vibration and consider wall crossing of that. And then it is recent work of Gamage, McQueen, and Webster that they prove homological mirror symmetry for multiplicative hypertoric varieties. So they conjecture that it is certain divisor complement of hypertoric varieties. So, well, indeed, this mirror equation essentially is almost like the multiplicative hypertoric varieties, except that, well, multiplicative hypertoric varieties should be resolution of this. So indeed, we are also interested to understand the relation. But well, right now, I don't understand fully. All right. So the wall crossing is like this. Maybe we will be brief on this. Anyway, so these are tropical tropicalization of complex hyperplane arrangement. So you have complex hyperplane arrangement. And then you take tropical picture of that. And then over this complex hyperplane, you have real hyperplane arrangement. So generic fiber of this picture is C star n, just like cylinder, n copies of cylinder multiplied to each other. And then when it goes to this complex hyperplane, the cylinder degenerate. So this is the degeneracy. Because of the degeneracy, there are mass of zero holomorphic disks. So what you do is you consider interaction of Maslow 2 disks with this Maslow 0 disk and produce more disks, and then you get these wall crossing factors. All right. So something like that. And then in that way, you will construct the SYZ mirror. All right. But I'm very brief on this. Yeah, any question? All right. OK, so now let's get to our current work. So my current work is to consider equivariant version of the construction that I have talked in the first part. Right, so the motivation for equivariant construction, well, there are several motivations. So one of the motivation is that, for instance, you consider a hypertoric manifold that I have talked about. And then, so the equivariant quantum cohomology is computed by this period integral. So integration of this volume form. So you notice that there is some non-trivial factor on this volume form. So it is work, it was work of Mabrin and Schoenfeld. So there are some non-trivial terms here. So here, right? So these are equivariant terms. So h bar and lambda I are some equivariant parameters of C star actions. So we want to understand these equivariant terms in terms of SYZ. Another thing is, well, for toric labial manifold, there's another type of brains that I have drawn, the rays, the agonistic Wafer brains. So they also, they have very interesting S1 equivariant open Gromov-Witten invariance. So if we don't consider equivariancy, then we cannot capture this open Gromov-Witten invariance. So indeed, a large group of people work on this, Lekats, Leo, Grabers-Aslow, Fang Liu Zong, and Fang Liu Sheng, and so on. So a big group of people work on this S1 equivariant open Gromov-Witten invariance. So we want to understand this in terms of SYZ. So we need an equivariant version of SYZ to understand these. Okay, and even simpler, so you consider compact toric manifold, so the equivariant quantum cohomology is captured by this superpotential. So it is very old work, of course, it is Hori Wafer, right? And Given Tao, and Lan Liu Yao, and so on. So it's very old work, but still, in terms of floor theory, it seems we do not understand this contribution, lambda log z, yet before. So we want to understand these terms, lambda log z, right? So this part, non-equivariant part, is the disk potential. So by the work of Chou O and Fukai O, Ota and Ono. So we already know this. But how about the log term? So this is the term we want to understand. Okay. Okay, so let's give a quick review, very quick review on equivariant cohomology. I'm sure you're maybe, yeah, very familiar with this already. So, well, if G acts on M freely, then of course the equivariant cohomology is just the free quotient. You take the cohomology of the free quotient. And then in general, it is not free, but then you make it free. So you multiply the classifying the contractible space that admit free G action. So that's EG. So you multiply by EG to make it free. And then you quotient by G, right? So M cross EG admits free action. Now you quotient by G. You use this to replace the original quotient, M quotient G, right? So this is a nice quotient, and you take the cohomology of this. So this has a vibration on BG, of course, right? So BG is the EG quotient by G, known as classifying space. Okay, so you have this fiber bundle, which we will use later on, always. So this is fiber bundle of this bigger space, enlarged space, mg, over the classifying space, mbg, and the fiber are m, all right? Okay. Well, these pictures give example of these spaces. So for instance, you take P1, and then you consider the standard S1 action on P1. You have two fixed points, and then you, well, in this case, classifying space is P infinity. So you have a bundle over P infinity, and indeed, well, the finite approximation would be just take P infinity to be P1. If you pretend P infinity to be P1, indeed this is just a Hilbert surface, F1, all right? Okay, so you have two fixed points, and that corresponds to the two sections of F1. All right. So that's how we visualize the classifying space. And then, for instance, if you have a free action on S1, you do similar job. So free S1 on S1, you also do this classifying space job business. So well, again, you pretend P infinity to be P1, then this you just get Hopf vibration, all right? The free action make this to be a non-trivial bundle, so this is just a Hopf bundle of S3 over P1, S2. Okay. And then the equivariant parameter is the cohomology of CP infinity. Right? So that's how we understand the equivariant parameter. All right, so that's a classical thing on equivariant cohomology. Now, let's go to compact toric variety. So as I have said, Given Tao and Hori Wafer use this potential to compute the quantum equivariant quantum cohomology. Okay. So for instance, for P1, the usual disk potential, the usual potential is just consisting of these two terms, Z and Q over Z. They correspond to two disks bounded on the left of this equator and right hemisphere of, right, bounded by this equator. All right, so this gives rise to these two terms, right, Z and Q over Z. But the equivariant potential have one more term, lambda log C. So that's the thing we want to understand. So indeed, well, the counting disk is done by Cho and O in the funnel case. And then Z is holonomy, as I have talked about. So you equip the circle or torus with thread U1 connections, and so you have these holonomy parameters. Okay. Well, the one difficulty is that, well, log Z is not even defined at Z equals to zero. So how can you make sense of counting, right? For counting, you want to write it as a series, and then, right, the coefficient would give the counting. But this is not even a series. This is not defined at Z equals to zero. So then we need some way to realize this log Z term. And then, well, then we will use another formulation of deformation. Rather than flat connection, we use boundary deformations. It was work of FOOO. Right? So instead of decorating L with flat connection, now we consider boundary deformations. So what we mean is that we put, well, for circle, we put just K points on the circle. All right. In general, it is hypertorus, right? So this is just one dimensional. So we just put points on there. So you consider this counting disks passing through these X K times. Right, and sum over all k. So this is known as boundary deformation. So this gives a series in x. All right. X is the dual parameters for this boundary deformation. Right. Okay. Well, indeed, for repeated inputs, you have transversality issue because when these points collide to each other, you have disk bubbling. But anyway, then you just perturb a repeated input to distinct positions. So you can interpret this as perturbation of Brownian structure, a very simple perturbation. You just perturb repeated inputs to distinct positions. If you perturb to distinct positions, of course, you have choice. You have k factorial choices of ordering. Well, then you need to choose which way to take. So one way is that you just take all the possibilities and then divide by k factorial, all right? So that's how exponential term come up. So you just consider all ways of perturbing in different orders and then divide by k factorial. And then indeed, only one way will contribute, right? For instance, for the left disk, you already fixed this disk, so you have to obey the counterclockwise order in order to contribute, right? So indeed, only one of the perturbation contribute to the disk. So that's why you get k to x to the power k divided by k factorial, right? Okay, so there is only one way to contribute. Okay, so then you get exponential x and q exponential minus x, right? So that's very nice. So that's how we interpret the log term, right? So instead of taking log, we take boundary deformations, and then the original z would be replaced by exponential x in this way, all right? So originally, we write it as z plus q over z, right? But now what we do is we replace z by exponential x. Then this is just x, right? It is no longer log z. Kind of like a cheating, but it works well. Now, what we need to do is to interpret this lambda x. What is this lambda x? Okay. Oops. Okay. So let's consider equivariant quantum cohomology to understand better. Okay, so motivation from the closed case. So you consider P1. So the classical cohomology is simple. It just have two generators, fundamental class and point class. And then the equivariant cohomology, well, indeed, it turns out it is tensor with the lambda parameters. So this is equivariant parameters, the P cohomology of the P infinity, the classifying space. Right? So this is the equivariant cohomology of P1. So indeed, it is. In terms of this picture, it is simple, right? So you have cohomology of P1, you also have cohomology of P infinity, right? And then you also have equivariant lift. So you have point class, so you just take this point, and then it corresponds to a section of the equivariant space, right? And so this is point equivariant lift of a point, all right? Now you consider cohomology, the cup product. So originally, point class cup with point class is zero, right? Because two points do not coincide. Now, if you consider equivalently, then indeed it is not true. So two points can still interact equivalently. The reason is, well, if you consider two sections in this picture, right? If you could consider two sections corresponding to the point class, because this bundle is non-trivial, indeed this is like Hilbert surface. If you pretend P infinity, it would be to be P1. So indeed, these two sections still intersect at the hyperplane class of P infinity. So that's why point class equivalently coupled with point class give lambda times point class. It is not zero equivalently. All right, so this is the picture to see that non-trivial. Okay, and then also the quantum cup product also has non-trivial contribution. Well, two points do not coincide, but there is a holomorphic sphere passing these two points, and you have output point evaluation to the whole P1. And so you have output to the fundamental class if you consider quantum cohomology, right? You're not just considering classical intersection. You consider counting of holomorphic spheres passing through the input cycle, which are these two sections in this case, and then giving you an output. You evaluate that output. You evaluate to P1. So that's why it is Q times the fundamental class. OK. Now we want to make use of this closed thing, well, to put it as an analog in the open case. So how to understand that? So we consider chains inside L equivalently. So we consider equivalent space of the Lagrangian, and we want to have this MK equivalent version similarly. So how to do that, right? So first of all, let's pretend this is correct answer. So, right, so we expect that this equivalent disk potential is this one, right? This is the expected answer. So this is M0, right? The disk potential is given by the obstruction term M0. And then you take the derivative of this, you get M1. So you expect that M1 of x should have output to lambda. So how to understand this, right? M1 of x should have output to lambda. All right. So if you draw the equivalent space, right? So you let's say L is S1, and then S1 act freely on S1, let's say. So then the equivalent space is the Hopf bundle, right, in finite dimensions. And then you try to take equivalent lift of the hypertorus x, right? X is just a point in S1, and you take the lift. It is not well defined indeed, because this bundle is non-trivial. This is Hopf vibration. So indeed, as you try to go to another, well, infinity of P1, then it wind around and then limits to the whole circle, right? So this kind of give a reasoning why M1 of x is the fundamental class, right? M1 of x, so this is the input, and then you wind about, so it flows to the whole fundamental class, so kind of lambda times the fundamental class, right? Lambda is just infinity of P1 in the finite dimension, all right? But this is very intuitive understanding, right? Of course, this is not quite make sense, so we need to make sense of this. Well, our way to make sense of this is to use Morse theory. So you consider family Morse theory for this fiber bundle, equivalent space over BT, so this thing, right? So you just take Morse theory because you want to consider flow, right? So, well, Hutchings defined the family Morse theory for fiber bundle. So what you do is that, well, you consider Morse function on the base, and then you pull back the Morse function to get a function on M. Of course, this is no longer Morse, and then you need to perturb. To perturb, you consider fiberwise function, right? And then you add this fiberwise function to the pullback function, right? Of course, well, in general, it cannot be Morse on every fiber because the fiber bundle is non-trivial. And then you just make sure that it is Morse on fibers over critical points of B, right? So B is here. So let's say you have two critical points. So you have two fibers. You make sure that the fiberwise function is Morse on these two fibers, for instance, right? And then you use these critical points, fiberwise critical points, to make a chain complex and define cohomology out of that, right? Okay. And then, well, let's skip this. So Morse index is just the sum of the fiber and base, and Morse differential is just also the sum of fiber and base. Okay, and then we apply this setting to this non-trivial bundle, LT over BT, right? So for instance, this is the free action on S1, right? Rotation on S1. We already have standard Morse function on P infinity. So if it is P1, it is just two critical points, right? We also have standard Morse function on the circle, and then you use partition of unity to make a function on the whole space and do this business. And then you have critical points, well, it is written in this way, right? So you have base critical point parameterized by lambda. So this is x. Right, this is this point and this point, 1 and lambda, 1 and lambda. You also have fiberwise critical point, which is 1, right, the fundamental class and the point class, 1 and x. You just tensor them, so you have these four critical points, right? So equivariant parameter, in this case, is simply critical points on the base, right? Very simple. And then, well, then the non-trivial bundle change indeed would lead to a unique flow line from x to lambda 1. Well, we recall that this is just S3, right? If you take finite dimensional analog, if it is P1, this non-trivial bundle over P1, which is just S3. S3 just have two cohomology class, right? S3 just have two dimensional cohomology, but now you have four. So no matter what, X should cancel with lambda 1. So indeed, there is a unique flow line from X to lambda 1 to make them cancel to get the correct cohomology. Right? So this realized the flow line we talked about before. So X should flow to here. So that's why inputting x would give you lambda. So this gives a nice realization of this term. And of course, then we need to combine them together, right? So this is just Morse theory, classical theory. The classical theory gives you this classical equivalent term. And then you need to combine with the holomorphic disk term. Then, all right, so, well, there are different ways of doing this. So, well, for the finite group case, Seidel-Smith kind of used family floor theory to study. Well, in the exact setting, study floor theory for two Lagrangians. In the exact setting, there is no disk bounded by one Lagrangian, so they study two Lagrangians, right? And then finite group, there are many works. So Chou Hong, Wu, and Hendricks, Lipschitz, Sarkar. I guess I don't have time to talk about that. And then for compact Lie group, Daemi Fukai is developing a formulation of family of this equivalent floor theory for divisor complement. Well, our way is to make use of Morse theory. So to combine, we consider Pearl trajectories, right? So we have flow lines, we also have disks. So we combine flow lines with disks to, and then we count these Pearl trajectories to define the floor theory. So we get A infinity algebra by counting these Pearl trajectories. And this A infinity algebra is defined over C lambda 1 up to lambda k, all right? And then, well, we like this Pearl trajectory more because, well, first of all, you notice that, well, it is finite dimensional. If you cut P infinity to Pn, this is finite dimensional in the chain level already. So you then this gives a more direct way to construct the disk potential and the mirror indeed. Right, so we make use of the Pearl trajectories. Okay, so for compact toric manifold, we carry out this. So this is in progress that we are writing, hopefully. Finish this month or next month, so hopefully. And then, so for compact semifinal toric manifold, we prove that the T equivalent potential is exactly what we expect. So this is the classical term, and this is the equivalent term, lambda. All right? And then the classical term indeed also have non-trivial contribution, 1 plus delta, like this stable disk contribution. It was our work, previous work with Chen, Leung, Cheng, that these are generating functions of stable bubble disk, and then well, it is again the inverse mirror map of the toric variety. All right, and then the second term is equivalent contribution. All right. Well, you notice that the first term come master of two disks. The second term come flow lines, but indeed in general it come master of zero disks. All right. So in this case, in the toric case, it is still rather simple because these two terms do not interact essentially. Right. The holomorphic disks master of two just contribute to the classical quantum part, and then the flow line contribute to this lambda, right? But they are separate to each other. And then, well, then we want a case which is more non-trivial. We want them to interact. So then we go back to toric Clapeyard manifold. So non-constant mass of zero disks exist in general, and this is toric Clapeyard manifolds give a nice example of this. So to talk about the toric Clapeyard, let's recall that we have gluing. We need to move this gluing to equivalent setting. So we have gluing between the immersed sphere and Clifford and Chekhov tori, right? So this is the gluing formula. Well, you multiply by Tn factor to make it higher dimension. And all these have Tn minus 1 action, right? For instance, this immersed S2, you have one S1 action on this, right? OK. So our theorem would be say that, OK, indeed, the gluing formula would not change in equivalent setting. So first of all, Well, you assume that the minimum mass of index is zero. So if L is weakly unobstructed, then the equivalent version is still weakly unobstructed. So weakly unobstructed in this sense, you have W, but you also have H times lambda, this equivalent term. And H could be non-trivial. This is essential term, H, new term that we need to understand. All right. And then if alpha is an isomorphism in the non-equivalent setting, then alpha T would be, it could live to an isomorphism alpha T for the equivalent setting. Then the Gruing formula just works well. And then now we make use of the Clifford and Chekhov torus. So we have, well, for the Clifford and Chekhov torus, the equivalent term is very simple. It is just lambda x. And then you use the Gruing formula to deduce the equivalent disk potential for the inverse sphere. All right. So combining this, this gives a nice formula for the equivalent disk potential of the middle one. All right. So indeed, this coincides with the physicist's computation a long time ago, well, for a kinetic Waffle ring. But now we are not working with a kinetic Waffle ring. We are working with the inverse S2 times Tn. All right. So what you do is you just substitute, right? So you solve the mirror equation for x, for this exponential x, and then you take log. All right, so then in this way, you get the equivalent disk potential. So we prove that this gives the equivalent disk potential. And indeed, this is x1 derivative of the physicist's potential for kinetic Waffle ring. Because if you assume divisor equation, they are counting disk with no input mark point. What we are counting is disk with input mark point. So you need to use divisor equation. So you take derivative of their potential, then it gives this potential. Right. So this gives a flawed theoretical way to understand their potential. I guess time is up, so I don't. Yeah, okay, time is up. So maybe, well, this is kind of computer computation. It doesn't matter. And then, well, these disks, well, the equivalent potential for a kinetic Waffle ring was computed by Fang Liu Cheng, and Fang Liu Song, and so on. They used localization to compute it. But here, we do not make use of localization. We kind of get a more conceptual way to show that these are the counting. All right? So we make use of the equivalent flow theory between the torus and the inverse sphere. So what we are counting is essentially per trajectory, right, flow lines together with these mass of zero disks bounded by the inverse S2. All right. So we have these disks coupled with flow lines. All right. OK, thank you. So this is the rough picture. Thank you.
By the way, I'll mention before it gets buried in questions, or maybe it won't be, we'll see, that I want to do a dinner tonight in the bistro. Since my daughter's coming, we'll have to do it relatively early, so let's say 5:30, but it will be free. So if you want free dinner, all right. But
thank
let's
you.
Have some math questions as well. Oh, yeah.
Is it too fast?
Well, it's a lot to think of.
Right. Yeah, well, kind of combinations of several works to realize this, right? Yeah.
So maybe one thing to ask about is, of course, a lot of people are interested in this quantum cohomology and these sorts of things for, Hamiltonian quotients, hyperkähler quotients.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Does this equivariant approach help with understanding what's going on there?
Right. So as I have mentioned, for instance, for the hypertoric manifold, so you have a Tn action on the hypertoric manifold. And then to have non-trivial quantum cohomology, you must use that action. And then in that case, the potential have non-trivial terms also. So the lambda log c, but indeed it has even more. So it has maybe I need to go back a lot of size. So for instance, for the hypertoric case, here. Okay. Let's see. It's here, sorry. Okay, so this motivation, what is going on? I don't know why it just get to this page. Okay, maybe I should. Okay. Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. So you have a non-trivial contribution in the hypertoric case. So by using this method, we can realize these terms, lambda log c, So just like the toric case, indeed, this term is exactly like the toric case. But then you also have this non-trivial term. Indeed, these are wall-crossing terms. So 1 plus z, although looks simple, this big z, indeed, well, is a monomial. And then these are non-trivial mass of zero disk term, wall-crossing term. To realize this, indeed, we need to make use of hyperkähler, the twisted space. So we need to make use of the S1 action on the twisted space to realize this term, which is not worked out yet. So, right. So that's original motivation. So current progress is that we already worked out this term, but we don't get this term yet. We need to use S1 action on the twisted space to get this term. Right. But if you get all these terms, then you use an open close mirror thing and so on to realize the equivariant quantum cohomology using this disk potential. This is, if you don't consider equivariant, then disk potential is simply zero in this case. So you need to consider equivariance to have non-trivial disk potential. That's why you have this, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry, the H is coming from this.
Right. The H is the hyperkähler twist action. S1, Yeah. Yes.
Does this have any connection with the categorical study of kind of equivariant Foucault category, and what Telemann is looking at that?
Right. So essentially, we are giving a formulation of equivariant Foucault category, but we just consider one object now. So we consider Lagrangian immersion and equivariant floor theory for that Lagrangian immersion, essentially.
So do you see similar algebraic structures? Like from the point of view we do here, we think of it as in the boundary of 3D theory.
Right. So, the theory is a bundle. Well, it is. Okay. Let's see. So it is. This page. Okay. Right. So the. Okay. This page. So the theory is a family over this C lambda. So this is the structure, I guess you want. So in infinity algebra, so the coefficient would be these equivariant parameters, lambda. Right. Lambda is kind of like partial units that you can pull out. So algebra over here. Right. Yeah. So essentially, the SYZ mirror is kind of, in good cases, it is tensor with this C lambda. So you get a family of mirror over this formal space.
Right. Probably, if you study this from the, as it's living at the boundary of the 3D n equals 4 theory, you would see like a more elaborate structure related to the BFN algebra. This is part of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, one thing that I think I've been very confused about is kind of. These hyperkähler varieties, for example, are, they come from three-dimensional gauge theories, but this is studying them in two-dimensional context, and sort of.
I think I'm getting myself confused, right? There's a couple of things. There's a couple of ways that 3D theory relates to the 2DA model. One of them is putting it in a circle. That would be that, and the other is studying what happens on a boundary.
Right.
The equivariant theory is supposed to be what happens at the boundary of pure gauge theory. For in this case, the group being the torus.
But the 3D pure gauge theory.
Yeah.
Right. Which is this whole Telemann story about. Right. So somehow, do you see any relationship between this conjecture of Telemann's we were discussing about taking fiber of a map being dual to a Hamiltonian torus reduction?
So that realization is kind of Hamiltonian reduction, right? Symplectic reduction.
Yeah.
But when we talk about the torus action, we don't take that reduction. So I guess that's the difference. Although we do get a family of mirror over here, right? So it's kind of like family of things, mirrors over the lambda, but I'm not sure whether it's the same thing or not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my S1 action, you know, I don't take the movement map and so on. So it's, yeah, I guess it's a little bit different that, well, in our setting here, the base CP infinity is Lagrangian indeed. CP infinity is treated as Lagrangian inside cotangent bundle of CP infinity. So that's Lagrangian. I guess if you want to realize that, I guess you need to treat that to be complex so that you also have holomorphic sphere in the base direction. I mean, in our formulation, if you do this formulation for Cn, for instance, Cn quotient by torus, for instance, then what you get is simply just the equivalent term lambda 1 log C1 and so on. But you don't get the disk potential for the toric variety, right? So if you quotient Cn by Tk, well, Hamiltonianly, then you get toric variety. But we don't get that. Indeed, we do not take Hamiltonian. So we what we get is just a lambda I log Ci. So that's the difference, I guess. So I guess you need to make use of this base direction, also sphere, then maybe there is a hope that you get back the quotient, symplectic quotient. So this is different flavor, kind of. Right?
I think it's the. You could probably think about it as the same 3D setting, but like on one side you have the A model on toric variety, and on the other side you choose different boundary conditions. There's one family of boundary conditions where you don't, which doesn't involve any quotienting, but it depends on an equivariant parameter. That's probably that. And then there's another, like distributionally, and then Neumann involves some quotienting.
I mean, there's also, I mean, somehow. I think the connection I'd like to see is, you know, Telemann Hesser has the story about how the Coulomb branches with non-trivial matter have to do with the quantum cohomology of, like, somehow things where the matter is telling you what kind of non-compact stuff you can have. He has this whole paper about how, like, the pure Coulomb branch is kind of the universal guy that acts on equivariant quantum cohomology for compact G manifolds.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow the Coulomb branch with matter, thought of as a subalgebra inside that, is the stuff that survives when you instead take the associated bundle, you know, like if you multiply by that matter, think of that product as an equivariant thing.
Right. That acts on quantum cohomology of non-compact G.
Yeah, somehow he's extremely vague about this sort of case. He sort of says, like, oh, well, like, the action is supposed to be defined by these operations, but these only make sense if you're compact. And if you're non-compact, well, maybe some of them don't integrate. Like, don't sort of make sense. But, you know, somehow there's some whole set of modes of them, and most of them will survive. And this is, like, exactly the stuff that's defining the Coulomb branches with matter.
That'd be interesting to carefully work out from this gauge 3D.
Yeah.
That's a different point of view we have. I think we're more algebraic about it here than it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, Telemann's papers. Very quick. I refereed it and tried to beat more out of him, which I semi-successfully did. Well, I mean, the paper got twice as long, but it's still like half the length it should be.
My group is always compact, by the way.
is always compact. The compact group, that's fine. I mean, that's always what physicists
Right.
Group.
Although, well, you have C star action, but indeed, I just make use of S1 in C star, right?
No, it's always the S1. Our seminars. Mm-hmm. Nobody else needs this room right after.
Yeah, it's very nice. So it's very casual. So nice. Yeah.
Continue on.
So all of you guys are working on kind of like these Coulomb branch, Higgs branch things, 3D?
No.
Oh, okay. I see.
I mean, I think more people were working on it like last year, so.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm the only one who's really sticking with it.
Sasha?
I have no idea what Sasha's doing. I mean, he's been talking about slightly different stuff, but.
He wanted to do the N equals 2 thing for a while.
Well, yeah, some whole thing to do with the 4D thing.
Yeah, kind of modeling everything.
Yeah.
I find that very interesting. Life is short.
The problem is it's very hard to make sense of the invariance there, right? For 3D counting is not hard to define, I guess.
It's not so bad if you try to get a set of parts SO3 invariant, it seems complicated. Uh-huh. But if you break it into like time and a Riemann surface, it's like totally fine.
Okay. I see.
It's like holomorphic maps.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah. So it's just like work like holomorphic map then.
Yeah.
Somehow, this does seem to play an important role, this kind of breaking to C times R, and then doing a bit more twist.
Otherwise, you see these nasty PDEs.
Can't have any PDEs.
Does it degenerate, like here? These with flow lines? Is this too naive for that? R and C.
I mean, like typically, like in the time direction, it's constant.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So it's
really just holomorphic.
Yeah. So it kind of looks like the phase space looks like the Hilbert space is going to be the cohomology of the space of holomorphic maps.
I see. So maybe family of holomorphic maps kind of, because you have time direction.
Yeah, but typically the equations say it's constant in time.
Oh, okay, I see.
Unless you introduce, maybe in an equivariant setting, you could say it kind of moves by a symmetry. Mm-hmm. So you take the trace. You're taking the trace of some action on the topology.
I see.
But typically it's just.
I see. You know,
when you say the cohomology of that space, oh, or you're wrong.
Right.
You could say it depends on the twist.
Depends on the theory. So like for the A twist of N equals 4, it's like going to be the Durham cohomology of some moduli holomorphic maps.
Yeah.
Particular which complexification you want to use is kind of a bit vague to me. But like, for N equals 2, it would be the double cohomology.
So could I think of that as kind of, from circle to cylinder, it's kind of like holomorphic cylinder is movements of the circle, right? So Hamiltonian action give you a circle and move that. And so this kind of time direction. So can I think of that as like family of maps, holomorphic maps, moving in time direction?
Yes.
And, right, so.
That's right, but normally, the simplest thing to understand, to think about, is the case of when the target is BG,
uh-huh.
and then you're looking at bundles, like on your Riemann surface times or Riemann surface times a circle, what bundles are you considering? They're holomorphic on the surface and flat in time.
I see.
So if this is a compact circle,
right.
Then your moduli space is going to be like the multiplicative Hitchin system
mm-hmm,
of a
mm-hmm.
G bundle with an automorphism.
I see.
But now if your target is something else, like kind of this flatness just translates, it's the equation d by dt of something is zero, so it translates into being constant.
Okay, I see.
So it's only interesting in time in the case when it's a stack.
Then it's very similar to flow theory in the 2D setting, because it's constant in time direction. So.
And flow theory?
Yeah, I mean counting spheres, holomorphic spheres or holomorphic disks, this kind of thing. So
well, I mean, that isn't time. Like my circle is moving and getting bigger and collapsing.
Uh huh.
So that's not. That seems. seems not constant. Yeah.
Because you are saying the time direction is constant, then only the holomorphic matter.
Yeah.
Then right.
Yeah, but it's kind of categorified because you have an extra.
Right. I see.
So this is why. So like if the time direction was a circle, it would like literally be this. But if the time direction is non-compact, then you're going to be sitting, instead of having a number, you will set associated vector space.
Oh, I see. It's quite a good simplification of that. I see.